support this NPR station.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Coming up today, we're going to hear Florida This Week from this past Friday night, including a discussion about the big gun rallies that took place in the state two weekends ago. We'll also talk about the call by a federal judge for Florida to reform the way it restores voting rights to ex-felons. While we play this show, too, please comment. Send us an email at dj@wmnf.org. And later on, we'll give you some background about the whole controversy involving Sinclair Television's stations. You may have noticed reporting about Sinclair and an op-ed that every Sinclair anchor was forced to read over the past few days. We're going to talk about that controversy. But first, one listener comment about last Friday's show. Last Friday, we got into yet another discussion about the outcome of the 2016 elections. And here's what one listener had to say following last Friday's show.
My name is Adam. I have a comment for the lady that called in named Joe. She was talking about people didn't get out and vote being one of the reasons why Trump made it into office, a couple other things she had mentioned. But one of the main things that she didn't realize or mention was the reason Trump made it into office was because of Hillary Clinton. She burned Bernie, is what she did, and she burned the Democratic Party. It's one thing she failed to mention. Not sure if people realize that. They probably don't want to believe that because they probably voted for Hillary, unfortunately, but she is the reason why Trump is in office. Bernie would have made it, and she burned him.
Well, that was a listener comment that came in after last Friday's program. And if you want to comment about anything you hear here on this show, you're always welcome to email the studio at dj@wmnf.org. I try to read every email I get on the air, and I promise I will try to read yours. Our email address is dj@wmnf.org. Well, here's a public TV program show from last Friday night. It's called Florida This Week, and it features usually four panelists, usually a Republican and a Democrat and two journalists. So that's what we have this Friday, this past Friday. And we're going to listen to a discussion about, among other things, the controversial question on the U.S. Census and how it's going to affect Florida. So stay tuned for Florida This Week. Coming up next, a federal judge orders the state to reform the way it restores voting rights to ex-felons. Massive protests against gun violence take place in Florida and nationwide. The Trump administration's decision to include a question about citizenship on the next census could impact states like Florida, which have a large immigrant population. And there's a lot of confusion over whether President Trump will keep his promise to protect Florida from expanded oil drilling. Political Insights next on Florida This Week.
From the WEDU studios, this is Florida This Week. And now, moderator Rob Lurie.
Welcome back. This week, our panelists are Dan Ruth is a columnist at the Tampa Bay Times. Bill Bunting is a Republican state committee man from Pasco County. Steve Bosquet is the Tallahassee bureau chief at the Tampa Bay Times. And Stacey Blake is a senior consultant with Blake Collins Group and a Democrat. Well, it's great to have you here. Thank you for coming. Well, a federal judge this week ordered the state of Florida to come up with a new way of restoring voting rights to ex-felons. In Tallahassee, Judge Mark Walker blocked the Scott administration's current system of forcing ex-felons to wait at least 5 years before they can get to vote. The state's current process requires ex-felons to petition to have their rights restored, and it's up to the Florida cabinet to make that final decision. Most states restore rights once a sentence has been served. Florida leads the nation in having the most ex-felons, 1.5 million, whose voting rights have not been restored. Governor Scott has until April 26th to come up with a new process. Democrats say the current system disproportionately affects African Americans. So, Steve, how does our process differ from other states?
In other states, convicted felons get their right to vote and other civil rights restored when they complete all the terms of their sentence. People are astounded to find out that in some states, a very small minority of states, I think Vermont is one of them, convicted felons can vote while they're incarcerated. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a 150-year-old system in Florida that goes way, way back to the dawn of statehood, and it has been dismantled very quickly here by Judge Walker, appointed to the court by President Obama.
What did he tell the state to do? What does he want the state to do?
He said the system is fatally flawed, and interestingly, because this was not what the litigation was about, Florida can still take away the voting rights. This is about getting them restored after you finish your sentence. He called it arbitrary. He called it unconstitutional. It's a violation of their First Amendment rights. There needs to be something. He said that the, and I've covered dozens and dozens of these clemency hearings, and Walker said that he read the transcripts of meetings. It's on a whim, The governor must be on the prevailing side. And you know, I think it should be stated for the, in the interest of history that this system that Walker struck down endured through many, many Democratic administrations. Okay, it isn't you can't lay this on the feet of Rick Scott alone. However, as everyone knows, when Charlie Crist was governor, they went to a streamlined restoration system that Rick Scott and largely Pam Bondi dismantled.
And Crist was a Republican back then.
That's right.
He was.
Yeah.
It's basically a voter suppression effort. That if these people, if you restore the voting rights of 1.5 million people. The theory is that most of these people are Democrats, which may not say much about Democrats, I don't know, but that they're more likely to register Democrat, and that would upset the balance of power in the state. So it's an effort. This isn't about law and order and justice and crime and punishment. It's about voter suppression.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you that the judge came very close. He didn't use those words, but he said in his order, it was in my story, he said that these cases shouldn't be decided by someone who's running for higher office,
right,
who's trying to shape the electorate that he or she has to run in. I mean, he just thought that was wrong.
Yeah. Bill, what do you think about the judge ordering Florida to change its system?
Thank you. I find it interesting because Steve had said previous administrations, when we had Bob Graham and Lawton Childs, and they had the same system in place, and nothing was ever done. I think that because Republicans have been in power for 20 years now, Democrats are looking for this for an opportunity.
So do you think you view this as a partisan move do you think the judge is acting in a partisan fashion?
I don't know if the judge is acting. I have no idea.
But would you expect it to help the Democrats?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And how do you feel about that? What do you think about that?
Well, I think that the cabinet can do it, but I think the process has to be speeded up. And I'm not happy about felons that have a history of violence that are repeat offenders if they can get back into the voting rights system. And I think they should really have a good waiting period.
Mm-hmm. Stacey, the Democrats say this disproportionately, what we do now disproportionately affects African Americans.
Yeah, you know, I think a key word here is arbitrary. And because we've done it for 150 years, doesn't make it right. We need to keep it simple, correct this situation that we have, restore rights when a sentence is completed. You know, as Steve said, that's how most states do it. There actually are two states who do allow voting while you're incarcerated, because your punishment for a crime is not related to how you might vote or not. You know, this is a system that needs to end, and, you know, leading the country in disenfranchising voters is really not where we want to be as Florida.
Steve, going back to Bill's point, though, Bill says he's concerned about violent criminals. Is it possible to leave out violent criminals from getting automatic restoration?
I think it is, and we glossed over this, but Judge Walker said they must fix this system by April 26th. Now, the ballot initiative that's on the November ballot that would automatically restore voting rights to felons specifically excludes people convicted of murder and any sex-related felony. They still have to go through this long, laborious process, and many people would say they probably should. But, you know, the vast majority of convicted felons, and this is why I think this issue is polling in the 60s and 70s, I venture to say just about everybody knows somebody, maybe somebody in their own family, who's run afoul of the law in their life, mm-hmm. a drug conviction, something like that. And so this person's permanently, for life, can't vote? I think people are having a hard time understanding where's the logic at.
It just gets down to a very simple, elemental issue of fairness, just being fair.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, last weekend, more than a million people marched and rallied peacefully against gun violence in the wake of the Parkland School massacre, where 17 people were killed. In cities across the state, including Tampa, Lakeland, Sarasota, St. Petersburg, and Bradenton, tens of thousands gathered to call on politicians to reduce gun deaths. They were led by the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas school survivors, who held an emotional rally.
My classmates and I laid helplessly on the floor, hearing and feeling rapid gunfire. As I am aware that the horrific tape that replays in my head will never be rewinded, I am also aware that the need for change is overdue.
Sadly, we will be repeating this, and it could be easily be in your city or your town. This stops now!
Rallygoers had varying demands. Some wanted a ban on weapons of war. Some wanted universal background checks. Others wanted to limit the size of ammunition clips. One idea was met with almost universal resistance, the suggestion that teachers be armed.
So, Bill, what do you think the impact of these rallies is going to be?
Well, I think it's going to be significant if it lasts. But the thing is, they're not addressing the problem, and that's the problem. They did a great job on protesting the peaceful marches, and I respect that, certainly. They really did a good job. But the problem here is it's a mental issue. It's the same problem we had in New Jersey. It's the same problem we had in Fort Hood. And the links in the system, all the way up from the school system, knew about this kid's problem. The sheriff that wouldn't go in to defend him, I call him a coward to do that. The sheriff's office themselves with the complaints. One right after the other, they all dropped the ball, including the FBI. Mm-hmm. So I hope that they take out a class action lawsuit, move forward. I mean, their lives are lost. I mean, their hearts are torn out, these parents. But I think that's where they have to move forward, and I think restoration be made in big dollars for everybody along the line, and they have to change the system. As I did a news article in another paper, and they should just have a hotline strictly for that. And this has got to stop with the soft targets. Kids know that they can get away with it in soft targets. They do it all the time, and
soft targets, you're talking about gun-free zones?
Gun-free zones, yeah. Absolutely.
So your remedy would be more funding for mental health. Your remedy would be to take disciplinary action against FBI agents or law enforcement when they missed it, and also to the social workers who missed this?
And let the federal government get involved with the money to have police officers in for every 1,000 students. And I think that's the only thing that's going to stop.
What do you think about the call to ban weapons of war?
I don't think that the... Look at it this way, Steve. We're approaching 1.9 million people with concealed carry permits, and a lot of them have ARs. They don't commit the crimes. They're not doing something wrong. This is a mental problem. This is a problem with the...
Ultimately, this is about the weapons. This is about getting the weapons of war, AR-15s and assault rifles and the extended magazines. We need increased background checks. That's the cause of the problem. You know, we keep hearing about all these law-abiding citizens. We need to protect the law-abiding citizens. These were law-abiding citizens. Mr. Cruz was a law-abiding citizen.
Because he bought the gun legally.
Yes, Mr. Mateen was a law-abiding citizen. The guy out in Vegas was a law-abiding citizen who assembled that armory. These kids, what they're doing, the placards are great, the speeches are great, and I agree with Bill that it's an admirable thing what these kids are doing, and it won't be worth a bucket of warm spit unless they can generate votes in November and vote out any elected member of any elected body who does not support enhanced gun control and extended background checks.
Well, Stacey, that is the question. Will these kids who are so fired up and attended these rallies along with their parents and teachers, will they vote in November?
Well, I've heard that question, and some have said, you know, if we look historically, maybe 18-year-olds don't vote enough. But this is a new movement and a new moment. Not only will the kids vote, their parents will vote and their teachers will vote. The people I saw at the rally in St. Petersburg, this was the full spectrum. Women, 90-year-old woman in a wheelchair, babies in strollers, lots of teenagers, lots of parents, and lots of grandparents. And they do not want any more of this gun violence. They want their children to be safe, and they've had it.
Steve, Bill mentioned mental health care. Can I ask you quickly, in the state legislature this year, did they increase funding for mental health care in the state of Florida?
They did, about $100 million. Uh-huh. Absolutely. I want to make a comment about voting, because this is interesting, I think, and a little history. 4 years ago, Charlie Crist was the Democratic nominee for governor against Rick Scott. He lost by about 60,000, 65,000 votes out of about 4 million votes cast. One of the reasons Charlie Crist lost that election was because the voter turnout in Broward County, where Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School is located, which has far more Democrats than any other county, the voter turnout in November was about 6 or 7 points below the statewide average. And so the point I'm making is only that and I've been asking about, in this state, it's a good law. 16 and 17-year-olds can pre-register to vote mm-hmm. and automatically get their voter registration mm-hmm. card on their 18th birthday. Mm-hmm. And so, as Dan said, I mean, there has to be an awakening. There has been an awakening with these rallies, but it's still to be seen if there's an awakening at the polling place when the early voting centers open.
That's really the key question. Yeah. Bill, is the NRA how is the NRA's reputation following the Parkland massacre? You know, in Tallahassee, the NRA has a pretty good track record of getting the legislation at once. Marion Hammer, very powerful in Tallahassee. What do you think about the NRA's reputation from here to the November election?
Oh, I think nationwide, I think it's done some damage. There's no question about that. Maybe if we can get Mr. Ruth to go up and take Marion Hammer out to dinner, they can iron out a few things up there in Tallahassee.
Mm. Well, I know I'd be protected because she'd be packing, wouldn't she?
Dan, what do you think about the NRA's reputation? Because, you know, it used to be Bill will tell us that he has a mailing list, for instance, of people that are interested right. in the Second Amendment, and that he can fire up a group of people, a group of voters, pretty reliably.
There's no question about that.
And has done so election after election. So is that going to be true in 2018, in November?
Well, I think it depends on whether these young students are able to maintain this fervor to counterbalance the NRA's influence over our elections. And that is the only way this whole scenario changes, where you confront the NRA on its own battlefield, so to speak, dollar for dollar, and helping to elect pro-gun control officials, and using those same resources like I said before, if you are, that to me is a disqualifying factor. If you support gun rights, if you support assault rifles and the expanded magazines, and you oppose the universal background checks, that alone should be a disqualifying factor. We did a profile of Marion Hammer, and there was a quote by Matt Gaetz in that piece where he said you can be 95% with the NRA all the way, but if you deviate so much, you get sideways with Marion Hammer, and no good comes from that. We need to impose the same ideological rigor on candidates running for office in support of gun control.
Would you go out to dinner with her and talk to her?
Come on!
Yeah, I would. Sure, I would.
It's on a record.
Well, sure, Steve, the NRA is pretty powerful in Tallahassee. You're there every day. You watch it up close. Tell us a little bit more about what it's like, what it's been like in Tallahassee over the last 20
sure.
years or so.
Well, Marion Hammer is tenacious, and where the mainstream media is wrong sometimes is they apply the same standard you would apply to the Florida Chamber of Commerce or something, and they look at money and campaign contributions. In this case, that's not it. It's the membership list and her alerts that she sends out. Mm-hmm. You know, she calls people. She'll call out Republican legislators for betraying the NRA agenda. As some of her folks think she goes a little bit too far sometimes. I agree with Bill Bunning. I think the NRA has taken a step back and a defeat here. But where the NRA is still a force is in a Republican primary for a legislative seat, where it's Republican against Republican. And you watch what happens when, as we all expect, when Richard Corcoran gets into the race for governor, and Richard Corcoran was fully in support of this bill, and he had the armed teachers and armed classroom staff as kind of a compromise thing with the NRA. But I think Corcoran's in for a rough road because he's going to hear it from Marion Hammer about betraying the national.
Even though he's faithful in almost any
other. Yes, he is.
He's been a solid 95%, as you said.
But in fairness, even before the tragedy in Parkland, a number of pro-gun bills, they can't get through the Senate Judiciary Committee because Joe Negron decided to put two moderate Republicans from Dade County, where gun violence is a major problem in the state.
They wouldn't let out of committee.
Yeah, right. So, Greg Stube of Sarasota has become the leading voice for the NRA's agenda in the Florida Senate. He can't get anything passed in that Senate Judiciary
Committee. All right. Well, the Trump administration's decision to ask people about their citizenship in the 2020 census has set off worries by some that immigrants will dodge the survey altogether, diluting political representation for states that have high immigrant populations and robbing many communities of federal dollars. Not since 1950 has the census collected citizenship data from the entire population, rather than just a small sample. States like Florida have a large immigrant population, especially Central and Southeast Florida. The population count happens every 10 years. It's required by the U.S. Constitution and used to determine the number of seats each state has in the House of Representatives, as well as how federal money is distributed to local communities. Communities and businesses depend on census data in deciding where to build schools, hospitals, grocery stores, and more. The political stakes of undercounting segments of the population are high. Already there are lawsuits as some states worry about how a low count will affect their political power and their federal dollars.
So, Stacey, is this a reasonable question to ask? And the Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, says it's a way to protect voters' rights. It's a way to that minority voting rights will not be diluted by immigrants. That's what he says.
You know, this story has elements of fake news, bad news, and old news. For Attorney General Jefferson Sessions to suddenly be concerned about minority voting rights, that's fake news. We have no evidence there. Now, concerning the undercount in Florida, that's possible with this new criteria. This is so serious for Florida. We could lose a congressional seat or fail to gain a congressional seat. We could lose billions of dollars in federal aid. You know, the Florida Philanthropic Network, this is the group of all of the community foundations, the corporate foundations, wealthy donors. They identified a full count in Census 2020 as their number one federal policy priority this year. They know that every dollar they give cannot begin to make up the gap that's possible if Florida doesn't count everyone. And finally, as to the old news, you know, this question of if immigrants are counted, somehow that connects to them voting. Immigrants don't vote. Citizens vote. Mm-hmm. And this is a false flag that is run up every 2 years, 4 years, all of this concern. It's only meant to divide us. Steve, so I don't know what's worse here.
Steve, what's your sense in Tallahassee? Are the politicians in Tallahassee paying attention to the addition of this question to the census? And are they happy? Or are they concerned? What's your sense?
No, my sense is that the Republican mainstream leadership position is in favor of what's being done here. I saw Marco Rubio tweet out this week. Rubio said, what's the big deal? Mm-hmm. We should be asking this question. So obviously we're not one of the 13 states that's suing the Trump administration. And Florida has historically been a donor state and has never gotten its fair share of federal money for transportation, health care, education. This would exacerbate that situation.
All right. Bill, what do you think? Fair question or not fair?
Well, it has some elements in it that I'm not happy with. Constitutionally, citizens are supposed to be polled, not immigrants. And we don't know if that's happening or not. When a polling person comes up to a house, how many people live in a resident? They come up with a number. How do you get that number? How do you justify it? And I don't see that happening. Maybe you have 9 people from MS-13 hanging out there. And I don't want them on my taxpayer dime.
Well, Bill, if there are 9 people living in a house, wouldn't you like them all counted so that when the federal dollars come to there's enough to cover everyone in that city?
I'd like the citizens of the United States to be counted.
You know, I look back at the original development of the Constitution on this question, and the word that's used is inhabitants. It's not citizens. Back, you know, if you go back to the 1780s, they're talking about counting inhabitants. So they also say they're not going to count Indians if they're untaxed, and they're only going to count African Americans as 3/5 of a human.
Well, Trump may want to go back to that. But the issue here, too, is in this climate of anti-immigrant fervor in Washington on the part of this administration, this is intimidating. You know, if we had a different administration which wasn't so anti-immigrant, perhaps people could be mollified about this question. But the question just screams intimidation, and it also gets back around to this issue of voter suppression.
All right. Well, back in January, U.S. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke had a short meeting with Florida's Governor Rick Scott at the Tallahassee Airport, where they later announced that expanded drilling off the coast of Florida was off the table.
That was a relief to many Floridians who feared that Florida would be included when earlier President Trump announced a plan to open up all the U.S. coastline to more oil drilling. Now that promised protection of Florida is in doubt. At a U.S. Senate hearing on March 13th, Zinke told senators Florida is still in the process. And 2 days later, the Interior Secretary told the House Natural Resources Committee that Florida did not get an exemption. So now members of Congress are trying to clear up the confusion. And Politico reported that according to documents it uncovered of communications between Washington and Tallahassee, it appears the original announcement in January that Florida would be protected from drilling was political theater cooked up ahead of time by the governor and the Interior Secretary.
So, Dan, I thought when the announcement was made in January, this was a real boost to Governor Rick Scott and his desire to be the next U.S. Senator from Florida.
It reminds me when Malcolm Glazer promised to pay for half of Raymond James Stadium. But you may have been in at that meeting. And in January, Zinke comes out. He's there with the governor and unequivocally says, no drilling, Florida's going to be exempt. Everything's going to be great. And then Trump, Scott could turn around and say, look what a great leader I am. He was never shown much interest in protecting Florida's coastline before he became a potential Senate candidate. But look what a great leader I am. And I brought the federal government to its knees. And this is going to be great. Now Zinke's waffling on this, his flip-flopping, has shown that he basically played Scott for a sap during this meeting. Now, how is Scott going to run around the state claiming what a champion of the environment he is when he can't get a serious commitment from the Interior Department?
Well, Steve, that is the problem. We're not sure where the Trump administration stands on this.
Right. The stakes in this one are real high because this is the so-called third rail of Florida politics. This is, you don't go out there lightly and advocate offshore oil drilling in a state with whatever it is, 1,200 miles of coastline.
And very quickly, we should point out, Nelson is firmly against the drill.
I was there that day. I'm sitting in the press room in the state capitol finishing a story, and the phone rings, and it's the governor's press guy saying, you need to get to the Tallahassee airport by 6 o'clock for a major announcement. The Secretary of the Interior is coming in. Well, we knew it wasn't to announce a new state park. We knew it was about oil drilling. And we go out there, and Rob, I can tell you, as a resident of Tallahassee, there's nobody in the Tallahassee airport at 6 o'clock at night except that guy with the circular vacuum. Just that guy. So this thing has just not gone according to plan. I don't have the transcript in front of me, but Ryan Zinke that night was unequivocal.
There was not going to be
and he went on at length about how, what a great advocate Rick Scott is for his state and all this stuff.
Now he goes back to D.C. and says something different.
Flip-flops.
Okay, all right. Well, before we go, what other news stories should we be paying attention to? Bill, your other big news story.
Thank you. I was in Tampa this week. I was invited down by Governor Scott, actually, as he signed off that bill for the first responders. And when I heard that young lady and how her brother died, I never realized how many first responders were really killing themselves and committing suicide over this. So Pam Bondi was there, the CFO was there, Corcoran was there, they were all there, five women senators. So I want to give him a lot of credit, and it was well received, and I think these guys are out for us every day, and I'm glad we can give something back.
First time they're covered for PTSD.
Yeah. First time.
Stacey, your other big story?
I want you to keep your eyes on the Parkland students. You know, last week we had the march. Next week they're hosting and organizing town halls across the country, including in Florida. Town halls, whether or not the member shows up. You know, they are not finished, they are not losing focus, and I think there's a lot more story here.
All right, Steve, your other big story?
3 weeks ago, the Florida legislature went home, a couple of days late, if you remember. They couldn't get the budget done on time. And now, somewhat remarkably, we're hearing loud talk about a special session on gambling for reasons we can't get into here, but there are differences between the state and the Seminole tribe about extending the compact, which lets the Seminoles make a lot of money from gambling and puts money into the state budget at the same time. So there are problems with that. This is being driven to some degree by Speaker Richard Corcoran, but I can tell you, most legislators I know, the last thing they want to do is get back to Tallahassee because a lot of them are running for re-election.
The school superintendents want a special session on education. What are the chances of that?
Zero.
Zero, okay.
Yeah.
Dan, you're on the big story.
Well, Tampa City Councilman Harry Cohen has just thrown the Tampa mayoral race into utter chaos by announcing his intention to run for the mayorship. Harry's a lovely guy, and I like him a lot, but I don't think his chances are particularly strong to win the mayorship. I was surprised
he wouldn't announce running for the clerk's job since he works over there and has long been considered sort of the heir apparent to Pat Frank.
Boy, that field is getting bigger and bigger.
Bigger and bigger.
All right. Well, thanks for watching Florida This Week. Your comments are always welcome. Please write us at ftwwedu.org. That was Florida This Week from this past Friday night on the PBS station in Tampa, WEDU-TV. And my guests were Daniel Ruth, who's a columnist for the Tampa Bay Times. Bill Bunting is a Republican state committeeman, active in the Second Amendment issue, and a Republican from Pasco County. Stacey Blake was the Democrat on that program. And Steve Bosquet, Tallahassee bureau chief of the Tampa Bay Times. Well, if you want to comment about anything you've heard here so far, you can email into the studio, our address, dj@wmnf.org. I've got a pair of tickets to give away to Dr. Michio Kaku. He's going to be speaking at the Mahaffey Theater in St. Petersburg this Sunday night. You may remember that for years and years, Dr. Michio Kaku hosted a program here on WMNF's main channel. The program has since moved to our HD3 All News and Talk channel. The source, which you can find by just going to wmnf.org/listen, and you can find all the 24-hour-a-day news and talk channel, HD3, that we do. But Michio Kaku's program, I'll tell you what, this is how I give away the tickets. We've got a pair of tickets to see Dr. Michio Kaku this Sunday night in St. Petersburg at the Mahaffey Theater at 7 o'clock. And the first person who can just simply email me the name of Dr. Michio Kaku's program, I'll give a pair of tickets to. So just give us the correct spelling of his program. Email this address, dj@wmnf.org, and we'll put you on the guest list for the Dr. Michio Kaku performance, or speech rather, at the Mahaffey Theater this Sunday night at 7 o'clock in St. Petersburg. Michio Kaku has written many, many books, and he's also on TV a lot as a commentator about science. He's a great guy, and WMNF brought him to town once and had a full house at the Falk Theater. Well, we're going to look at another controversy, and this involves Sinclair Broadcasting Group, which operates TV stations here in Florida in Gainesville, Pensacola, Tallahassee, and West Palm Beach. Sinclair Broadcasting, which owns more than 170 U.S. TV stations across the country, has ordered local news anchors to read a script decrying some media outlets for false news and fake news stories. And the script reads, "This is extremely dangerous to a democracy." Deadspin, which is a website, created a supercut of the anchors reading the script and the newscasters reciting the identical lines. And one anchor at a Sinclair-owned TV station told CNN, "I felt like a POW recording a message." Let's listen to this controversial message that's being read on Sinclair TV stations across the nation.
Hi, I'm Fox San Antonio's Jessica Headley.
And I'm Ryan Wolf.
Our greatest responsibility is to serve our Treasure Valley communities.
The El Paso, Las Cruces communities.
Eastern Iowa communities.
Mid-Michigan communities.
We are extremely proud of the quality, balanced journalism that CBS 4 News produces.
But we are concerned about troublemakers plaguing our country.
The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media. More alarming, some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
The sharing of biased and false
news has become all too common on social media.
More alarming, some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
Unfortunately, some members of the media use their platforms to push their own personal bias and agenda.
Okay, so you get the idea. All these anchors at local TV stations were required to read the same exact announcement criticizing false news and fake stories. Sinclair is requiring stations to run those segments. And then it also runs segments from Boris Epstein, a former advisor to President Trump, who often speaks in support of the White House on the Sinclair stations. But many anchors at the Sinclair stations are not happy about it. So let's look back at a piece that was done on PBS a few weeks ago about Sinclair, which proudly says it is a conservative news outlet. And
PBS did a story on the topic on the NewsHour. What's so interesting about local news is that if you look at the surveys of where people get their news from, almost the biggest number usually comes in at local news. The internet, I think, is rising, but for many years it was local news stations, local TV news stations, that many people relied on for their entire news. The survey said that local news were the most trusted newscasts and sources of news in the country. So here's a report on the NewsHour on PBS about Sinclair Broadcasting. Let's listen into it right now, and we'll see if we can get this queued up here.
When a company finds a way to make driving safer, and Goldman Sachs.
All right, we're going to join it in just a moment. This is, I don't know how this commercial got in here, but we're going to hear it in just a moment. This is a report from the NewsHour on PBS.
And now for a different kind of media story and a question. Does it matter who owns the TV station that delivers your local news? Polls show that many Americans trust local news more than other sources. The largest owner of local stations in the country, Sinclair Broadcasting, is planning a merger that would make them even bigger. It is a move that is raising concerns because of Sinclair's policy of combining news with partisan political opinion. William Brangham has the story.
A train derailment in Tennessee.
Some routine road maintenance has led to a squabble.
We have some breaking news to tell you about. This is out of Bethesda tonight.
Night after night, the country's largest owner of local TV stations, the Sinclair Broadcast Group, reaches over a third of homes across the nation.
Compromise plan for the controversial Canisius Inn.
Most of us think of local news as just that, local. Stations run local stories produced and reported by local people. But if recently you tuned in to, say, WVTV, which is Sinclair's station in Milwaukee, you saw this.
Does the president have to repeat that fact day in and day out for us to believe it?
That's Boris Epstein, former member of the Trump administration and now chief political analyst for Sinclair. And here he was again on WEAR in Pensacola.
The president stating the fact that the fringes of the left and the right.
And on KSAS in Wichita.
Are both capable of hate and violence does not mean he's condoning any of it.
And again and again on every single one of the 173 Sinclair stations across the country. On those stations, you might also see these.
We should only tear down the bad statues, one viewer told me. But who decides what is bad?
That's Sinclair executive Mark Hyman.
What responsible adult hasn't pointed to a scar as a reminder to not repeat a foolish act from their youth?
Or these, the weekly so-called Terrorism Alert Desk.
From the Terrorism Alert Desk in Washington, I'm Allison Starling.
Sinclair mandates that these clearly conservative editorials and features get broadcast on every one of their local stations. In some cases, stations have to run them as often as 9 times a week. Eric Lipton is a reporter for the New York Times who's been covering Sinclair.
They have, you know, what they call must runs, which include Boris Epstein, who was a surrogate for Trump, who is, you know, on the air talking about conservative issues. You know, while the local news stations largely decide what their local news is going to be, you know, a covering of local government crime and local issues, there are these must runs that go on their networks across the United States, which are, have a decidedly conservative flavor.
This partisan tilt has many free speech advocates alarmed because not only does Sinclair own such a large chunk of the marketplace already, but it's hoping to get bigger still. If a proposed $4 billion merger with Tribune Media goes forward, Sinclair would now reach 3 out of 4 American households. Journalism professor and former Milwaukee station manager Louis Friedland. And
it is a real step in a very different direction to begin to say that the most trusted news source of most Americans is going to be allowed to be turned into an opinion organization, opinion machine, for a very narrow, narrowly conservative point of view, night after night in local communities.
Television remains the main source of news for many Americans. In 2016, 46% of adults said they got their news from local TV stations. And it's information they trust. 41% of registered voters said they trust local news to tell the truth, while just 27% trust national news. Sinclair disputes having any kind of a political bent. Its executives declined to talk with us on camera for this report. But the record shows that the Maryland-based company has used its ownership of stations to push partisan conservative viewpoints for years. For example, after the 9/11 attacks, Sinclair required anchors and reporters to read messages supporting President George Bush's efforts against terrorism.
The names and the faces of the fallen tell their own story.
In 2004, when ABC News Nightline devoted an entire show to reading the names of U.S. service members who had died in Iraq,
Kendall Waters Bay, Sorrell Childers.
Sinclair, which owned 7 ABC affiliates at the time, barred those stations from showing the broadcast. Later that year, in the midst of the presidential campaign between John Kerry and President George Bush, Sinclair mandated all its stations run a special that included clips from a distinctly one-sided documentary that questioned John Kerry's Vietnam War service.
I was outraged, and still am, that he willingly said things which were untrue.
And more recently, Sinclair had its stations run this segment, which called the national media purveyors of fake news.
Unfortunately, some members of the national media are using their platforms to push their own personal bias and agenda to control exactly what people think.
If the opinions were confined just to the commentary...
Sinclair even caught the eye of HBO's John Oliver, who poked fun at how Sinclair sometimes forces conservative talking points into the scripts that their local news anchors read.
Did the FBI have a personal vendetta in pursuing the Russia investigation of President Trump's former national security advisor, Michael Flynn?
Did the FBI have a personal vendetta
in pursuing the Russia investigation of
President Trump's former national security advisor, Michael Flynn?
This blurring of news and opinion is one criticism of the company. The blurring of news and advertising is another.
Hey, two Oregon fish sandwich.
There are numerous examples of Sinclair stations running what are largely paid promotions masquerading as news pieces.
More and more patients at Huntsman Cancer Institute are recording their life stories.
Like in this case, where Sinclair stations across the country ran these segments about the Huntsman Cancer Institute. They looked like news spots, but were in fact funded by the Cancer Center, something viewers were not told. The FCC is still investigating that case. Sinclair's bid to buy Tribune Media and thus expand its reach dramatically in the local news market has drawn plenty of criticism. Sinclair says critics have it wrong. They say it's about economics. Quote, the proposed merger will advance the public interest by helping to shore up an industry buffeted by well-known economic challenges. Traditionally, to protect against any one company becoming too dominant, Congress has set certain caps on how many media outlets one corporation can own in a given market. But the FCC recently changed those rules. Under the new leadership of Trump appointee Ajit Pai, the FCC has now made it easier to approve Sinclair's expansion.
All of those in favor say
Tom aye. Wheeler is the former chair of the FCC. He thinks these new changes are a blow to a free and vibrant press.
The Trump FCC has, in one very short period, moved to change three basic rules that have been in place to protect the diversity of voices and avoid monopolization of the broadcast television market. We have a society in which the flow of information is crucial to a democracy. And when that free flow of information gets choked off by corporate consolidation, we ought to all worry.
Eric Lipton of the New York Times discovered meetings and correspondence between Ajit Pai and Sinclair executives that he says raises questions about the company's influence with the Trump administration.
He met with the executive officers of Sinclair just a few days before Trump was inaugurated, where they made clear to him that they were looking for the Trump administration to roll back some of these restrictions that were essentially limiting their ability to get bigger. And it was just a matter of a couple weeks when all of a sudden Pai was named chairman and he was actually rolling back the same rules that they had approached him on. And only as a result of rolling back these rules is Sinclair merger going to be able to go through.
It's not just as Chairman Pai is suggesting a simple shift in ownership regulations. It's actually a shift in our entire broadcast ecosystem.
A final FCC decision on the Sinclair Tribune deal is expected later this year. In Washington, D.C., I'm William Brangham for the PBS NewsHour.
All right, William Brangham's report from the PBS NewsHour on Sinclair and its political leanings and its intention to impose its point of view on all the local TV stations it buys. That was a report that the NewsHour carried late last year, and you can see it on their website. We also carry the NewsHour on our HD3 channel, The Source, at 7 p.m. and 7 a.m. So if you're in your car and you're looking for something intelligent to listen to, the soundtrack to the NewsHour is on WMNF's HD3 on the drive home at 7 o'clock at night. We did get a winner to the Michio Kaku tickets. He'll be in St. Petersburg at the Mahaffey Theater this Sunday night at 7 o'clock. And David was the first one to say that the program that Michio Kaku hosts on the radio is called Exploration. So thanks to everybody that emailed in. We're going to open up the phone lines and take your phone calls. Our phone number is 813-239-9663, and our email address is dj@wmnf.org. So if there's something that happened over the weekend, if you want to talk about the controversy over Sinclair, we can do that. Our phone number again, 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. And I've got a caller already. Not sure who it is, but let's see who's calling in. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi. How are you doing?
Good. It's Daryl, who's one of the frequent callers here at WMNF.
Yeah. I would just like to say, based on what I heard, you were, your panelists, they were talking about... I wonder now, since that Holy Week, wink, wink, is now over, I wonder, will Ms. Laura Ingram backtrack her statements to Mr. David Hogg? And you notice how a lot of people are coming out now saying that he was not a part of the Parkland shooting, which I find disgusting. And Sinclair, isn't that the name of the defunct gasoline?
Yeah, I think it was they had the dinosaur. Didn't they have the dinosaur logo?
Yeah,
Sinclair. Yeah,
yeah. Are we going to start saying I like Ike now?
Well, the interesting thing about Laura Ingram is that she announced last week because advertisers were withdrawing their support of her show, mm-hmm. And she announced that she was taking a vacation, which is also how Bill O'Reilly started his exit from Fox News, announcing he would take a vacation, saying, don't worry, I'll be back. But I think that what David Hogg did by calling his supporters to call for an advertising boycott was really effective. I mean, the boycotts go back, you know, many, many years. One of the great effective boycotts was the Montgomery bus strike,
yeah.
Led by Dr. King, in which he said, look, if we're not going to be treated fairly here in Montgomery, then we're going to boycott the bus system. And that seemed to be a really good nonviolent way to put pressure on the powers that be.
Yeah, I think that it would behoove all of us to finally understand that people like Laura Ingram and Dana Lash and what's his face on Fox News and all the rest of those conservative pundits, they get paid fabulously well to say what they say. And it's about the money. And like on one of your shows, when you had some young people on here, I just basically came from this standpoint instead of like just patting them on the back and telling them what a wonderful job they're doing and we stand before you. I just came from this standpoint because I'm a child of the 60s and they don't understand that the door and the room that they're about to go into right now, you're about to see a side of America that's frankly a stank. No, not stink, but stank. And it's ugly and it's disgusting. And there are some people who like things the way that they are, and they are such a way. And I promise I'm going to get off your air, and you can correct me if I'm wrong. I heard a news story that in the sovereign state of Kentucky, the Republicans have pushed up an 18-year-old job as dog catcher, city councilman, mayor, representative, state senator, but they're pushing this kid up to be governor. What they've done was to make them to accelerate their schedule of getting youth, counter youth, to come out and say that they are for guns. Like they found some rapper somewhere to say that, you know, somebody approached him to do anti-bullying, you know, do an anti-bullying rap, but he shot back and said, no, he think that they should be punching back instead of doing anti-bullying. So what all they have done is made those individuals accelerate their schedule, and it caught them by surprise that they really were surprised at that massive turnout over the nation and in Washington, D.C. about youth. I'll be standing by, but guys, you got to be awake and just be aware of what's really going on. Thank you for taking my call.
All right, Daryl, thanks for kicking off the program. Well, if you want to add something to the conversation, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. I think there is a full court press against the Parkland students. They have had a lot of success. They had the rally a week ago Saturday that included more than a million people. They had quite a TV audience. I watched CNN and Fox and MSNBC after I got home from the St. Pete rally. I was at the St. Pete rally for about an hour and a half, and saw 5,000 people there, and then got home, and I was watching a little bit of the National March on TV, and I kept flipping through the three news channels from MSNBC to Fox to CNN, and CNN and MSNBC had a lot of coverage of the National Rally, but Fox, every time I tuned in, they were either at a commercial or they were discussing something else. They weren't really focused on the rally. But there is a lot of pushback because I think the high school students from Parkland have had a huge amount of success, and they've energized people across the country. And we've seen a lot of young leaders rise from places like Hillsborough High and Tampa Catholic and Blake High School here in the Tampa Bay area, and high schools all over the area. So now I think they're trying to destroy the right-wing websites. They're trying to destroy the reputations of these Parkland students because I think they're very fearful. If they're successful in getting Laura Ingram off Fox News, what else can they tackle? I mean, this is a pretty big movement. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to Mike, who's in St. Pete. Mike, you're on. What would you like to say?
Thank you. I just wanted to say I agree with that last caller that the youth of America is on the upswing, and we should be listening to them. And, I think that the movement is yet to be seen, the power of it, and that I'm very impressed by all the youth of America coming together, and that it's a very important movement, and we should all support it.
All right, Mike. And Mike, what do you think the message that you like the best that these young people are advocating? What do you think the best message is that they're advocating?
Well, we obviously need gun control because there's too many mass shootings.
And what kind of gun control would you favor?
Well, I think a higher age limit for to purchase guns, I think, would be important. And more training about the proper use of firearms if there was a defensive need.
All right. Well, Mike, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call.
Thank you.
Great to hear from you. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. And let's go to Frederico in Clearwater. Hi, Frederico. You're on. What would you like to say?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I am completely against gun control because I don't see any relationship between people that have mental problems and my right to keep arms in my house, to buy an AR-15, to teach my kids how to shoot. What did I do wrong to be affected by the Parkland massacre? Nothing. So basically what I see here is the left manipulating these children in Parkland, these young people who really, you know, they are not to be blamed.
Well, Frederico, how did the left manipulate the Parkland high school students? How did the left do that?
I think they are trying to get people to the polls to vote for the candidates, and they're using this flag.
It's all right, like Frederico, I'm sorry to say we're out of time. All right, so there's Frederico thinking that the left has manipulated the Parkland students. What do you think? If you have a comment about it, please call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And we'll play your comments back tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. Now stay tuned for Sean Cannan. He's got a very interesting program coming up on Midpoint. This is WMNF Tampa St. Peter.